Episode number 197, Live Tournaments. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. Want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Hope you had a Merry Christmas. And coming up, a Happy New Year. So I got back from Vegas. I worked a 120 in fireman's lingo. That's 120 hours straight, which equals 5 days. I have today off, and then I go back for 96, which is 96 hours in a row, 4 days. So I'm squeezing in a podcast here real quick. I got back from Vegas. I was out there for about a week, played some live tournaments, played a little live cash. I did two entries into a win daily, bageled both of those. I have a hand from one of those tournaments. And, oh no, I take that back. The hand is from the Venetian, where I actually played with Lori Persinger. If you guys remember, she was a guest on the show, so that was pretty cool. Got to play at the table with her. It was a fun time. Had fun with the family, exchanged gifts, got to get some cards in. It was just it was a good trip. It was fun. But I'm back now, and I want to thank you guys for using the Amazon links for your Christmas purchases and all that. And if you haven't signed up yet, you really don't have to do much. Just click on the link in the show notes or go to headsuppoker.poker, click on the Support Us tab, and then click on any one of the Amazon links there. And any purchase that you make, it doesn't have to be one of the books that we have up there or anything. If you use that link every time you make a purchase with Amazon, kicks a little bit back to the show. Okay, so onto the hand. This was at the Venetian. It was a $250 buy-in. I believe the guarantee was $25K, if I'm remembering correctly. Lori's probably screaming a different answer right now, but if that's not it, I can't remember. I think it was $25K buy-in. We ended up getting about, by the time the registration ended, I think we had 160 players or something like that. So they, if it was 25K, they hit the guarantee. But this was first level. We have 150 big blinds because the small blind, big blind is both 100. It's a 100-100. First level, levels are 30 minutes long. The table I'm at is pretty active. Typical low buy-in tournament like that. I think it's an average table. Like you'd think it's a pretty active table. People are playing hands in early position that they generally should not. There was a guy I saw limp 2-3 suited under the gun. So gives you a kind of idea of the level of competition we got here. All right. So this hand we have under the gun and he limps 100. He limps 100 under the gun. He'd been playing pretty loose. I could see here him limping here with pairs, probably eights and below. I could see him limping here with all suited connectors, with broadways suited and unsuited. I think this guy is going to raise with like possibly eights, but definitely nines plus. He's raising with suited broadways. And he might even, yeah, he would definitely raise with those. I was going to say he might raise with the, Jack 10 suited for sure. Jack 10 off, he's probably limping. I could also see him limping things like 8-9, 7-8 offsuit. It sounds pretty wide, but, he was playing a lot and, he was drinking a beer first level of a tournament that's going to last, 15 hours. So that gives you an idea. Okay, so he limps. Low jack to my right limps. He's been tighter. I think he's going to limp here with a lot of smaller pairs, probably broadways, but he's thrown away, you know. If under the gun were in his spot, he would be calling there with things like 9-7 offsuit, and this guy is not going to do that. Okay, so LoJack limps for 100. We're in the hijack with 150 big blinds, and we have 9-6 of diamonds. We have 9-6 of diamonds. In this scenario, I choose to limp because the cutoff and the button were they were not really three betting. They were limping a lot and kind of folding. I hadn't seen them three bet yet. This is just the first level, but I didn't get the impression that I was getting any heat from behind me there. And the small blind, kind of the same scenario, and Lori's in the big blind. So I call with 9-6 of diamonds, and the small blind checks his option. Lori checks her option, and we go to a flop. So we have five players, 500 in the pot. 15K is effective stacks. And with 9-6 of diamonds, we get a flop of 9 of spades, 4 of spades, 4 of diamonds. Okay, so we got top pair. We have a backdoor flush draw. We don't really have a possibility for a straight, but top pair with the backdoor flush draw is what we got. As far as anyone having a four, I do not imagine the guy to my right would have a four unless it's ace four suited or pocket fours. I don't think he's doing anything there with even like 5-6 suited. I can't picture this guy. He just seemed kind of tight. Maybe he would play that. I suppose we could probably say that he might have 5-4 suited, but definitely ace-4 suited is in his range and pocket fours. He could also have a better 9. But under the gun, he leads out. So into 500, under the gun, the loose guy, he leads out for 300 into a 500 pot. The guy to my right folds, so that's good. And now it's on us. So we got small blind and big blind check. So small blind check, Lori checked. Under the gun leads out for 300. And now it's on us. So what do we do here with 9-6 of diamonds? Think about what you would do in this spot. I think we can agree that we're never folding here. I think it would be a mistake to lay down top pair here on this board when a loose guy leads out. All right. So do we call or do we raise? I think there's a lot of cards on the turn that we're not going to be necessarily happy with. We don't want to see a 10 or above. We do not want to see another spade. I think a good card would be a 6 and a good card would be a 9. But a good card would also be a diamond. But there's more bad cards coming than there are good. So I think we have the best hand here quite a bit. And I think raising is the thing to do. Try to get money in the pot when you got the best of it. And don't put money in when you don't. So we make it 800. So the pot is basically 800 now after UTG's bet. We have two players behind us that have already checked and not really shown any interest in the pot, the small blind and the big blind. I think we want to try to raise here and get heads up with the loose player in position and like that. So we make it 800. We basically bet the pot. Small blind folds. Lori thinks for a little bit. And I remember thinking, her decision looks to me not like she's thinking of folding or calling, but like she's thinking of calling or raising. And maybe she was thinking of folding, but I really don't think so. She calls the 800, and then UTG flicks in a call. So now we have a pot of 2,900. We have about 14K behind. And the turn is the 8 of diamonds. So with 9-6 of diamonds, the flop was 9 of spades, 4 of spades, 4 of diamonds. And now the turn is the 8 of diamonds. Okay, so we picked up our backdoor flush draw. We still have top pair. And UTG, I'm sorry, Lori checks, and UTG checks to us. So with 2,900 in the pot, what should we do here on the turn? I think that the eight of diamonds is a great turn for us. I think it's one of the ones that we were that we already mentioned that we would like to. You know, we wouldn't mind seeing a turn if it's that card. If we could look into our crystal ball and say the next one's coming out the eight of diamonds, we would we'd be quite happy with that. So we got that. Now the question is, do we bet here to protect our hand or to get value from worse? And I think the answer is yes to both. We still have top pair. Now we picked up a backdoor flush draw. So if by chance someone has a better nine, which if they have a nine, it's likely a better nine, then we need to, I think we need to bet here. Into 2,900, I end up betting 1,600. And looking back, I would have liked to see myself bet just a little bit more. When they call, when the big blind and UTG call my flop raise, I think they're pretty heavily weighted towards flush draws, over cards, probably not Lori, but I think UTG, it's likely that he could have some broadways in here with maybe two diamonds or just two over cards, something like king-queen. Ace-jack. He's probably raising ace-jack under the gun there, so we could probably remove that. Maybe things like jack-10. He could certainly have ace-4. He could have 4-5 and have played it kind of tricky by checking on the turn. But there's a part of me, too, that this guy, I think he's betting a 4 here on the turn. If he is checking a 4 on the turn, then I think he's probably going to check raise here, especially with the double suited board now. So I think most of the time he's going to lead out here if he's got a four. The board's becoming draw heavy, and I think we're dealing with him is a lot of flush draws. So we bet 1,600. I would have liked to see myself like hell, maybe even pot it here. Maybe just go like 2,900 or 3K. But I bet a little bit more than half the pot. I bet 1,600 into 29. Lori thinks for a little bit. And when she's thinking like this, it really made me feel like she's got some type of draw. Like a flush draw or a... Jack 10 wouldn't really fit in there because she's kind of tight. Yeah, it just feels like a lot of flush draws or possibly a better 9. Fours are in her range being the big blind, but I don't know that she's going to check that twice there, especially with this board like this. So I lead out for 1,600 after being checked to me. Lori calls the 1,600 from the big blind under the gun. He looks a little pained, but he flicks in a call. So, we go to the river now. We got 7,700 in the pot. And when they both call this, I'm putting them on some kind of draw, possibly an 8, maybe a 9. Yeah. So, we go to the river with 9-7 of diamonds. The river is the queen of clubs. So, the final board, the flop was 9 of spades, 4 of spades, 4 of diamonds. Turn was the 8 of diamonds, giving us our backdoor draw. And the river is the queen of clubs. Lori checks, and then under the gun checks. And this is where I think I should have gone a little bit more with my live read. The question here is, do we bet or do we check behind? Are we ever getting called by worse? If they have flush draws, then hands that could call us that are worse are things like 10-8, jack-8 of spades, ace eight of spades, you know, any hand with a spade in it, in an eight. So we could get called by an eight. A worse nine, I don't think under the gun has a worse nine than, I don't think he has 9-5, 9-3, or 9-deuce. He could have better nines, and this line would make sense for that. Both of them could have a queen, and they could have all the flush draws. I don't think they have a four at this point. After having the way the action has been, they've been pretty passive since I raised on the flop. So do we ever get called by worse here? We're basically targeting an eight, and we have to ask ourselves, does it make sense to bet here? And there are going to be times where we get called by a better nine and a queen, and we're kind of value owning ourselves here. So, looking through the hands that they could have, they could both have the flush draws, and those being ace deuce, ace three, four. I'm sorry, ace deuce, ace three, ace five, ace six, ace seven, ace ten, ace jack. I don't think Lori's raising there in the big blind when the option is on her with the players that limped with ace jack suited. I don't think she's doing that, but she's certainly not calling a river bet with that with ace high. The other guy, he's probably raising with ace-10 suited and ace-jack suited there, so I think we can probably remove those from his range. So we will get called, I think, if we make it small enough, by ace-8 from, probably not from Lori, because she's got the guy to act behind it, but definitely from UTG. I think he would give us a little curious call there, you know. We could also get called from the under the gun by, like, if he had 10-8, if he had jack-8. Queen-8's definitely calling, but that beats us. King-8. I think the only way that he's calling those hands on the flop, though, when he leads out, is if they were suited. So there's kind of a few combinations of that. You know, there's king-8 suited, jack-8 suited, 10-8 suited. Maybe things like 7-8 suited, 8-6 suited. I could see him playing those. I think he's probably folding 8-5 suited, so we don't get value from that. But this really looks to me like a couple of flush draws, and we're just kind of hoping that that they had an 8 in those draws to get called. So it really felt to me like I had the best hand here, and I thought for, well, what's a long time for me, probably 20 seconds or so, whether I should bet or check. I ended up checking, and I really think we could have squeaked out just a little value bet here. There is going to be times where they had something like queen-jack suited, you know, the queen-jack of spades, and they were going for the flush draw, and they happened to hit the queen on the river. But the line that I've taken, it could really look like I have a four. I'll throw in a call there. I don't think they're ever folding a queen there. But I think we could squeak out a tiny bit of value from an eight. And I have even seen calls like this, from guys. If you make it, I mean, here, there's 7,700 in the pot. Blinds are 100, 100. So we have 77 blinds in this pot with a pair of nines. Even if we only bet 1,000 here, that's still 10 big blinds. I mean, you know, aces on average makes like 15. So if we could squeak out a little value bet here on the river for like 1,000 or 1,200 or maybe 1,500, that's kind of the same as getting aces, you know? So we can't really pass these spots up. I really think I should have bet just a small little bit. And if I get raised there, I think it's either a bluff or some weirdly played four, or would they raise a queen there if I bet that small? They might. But I think I missed a little river value bet there. I wrap the table. Lori shows it's either ace five or ace six of spades. So she had the nut flush draw. Lucky for me, that did not come in. And the other guy kind of laughed, and then he tossed his cards in. So I think he also kind of looked to me like he also had a flush draw. It's just his reaction to Laurie. I didn't see his hand, Laurie. Maybe you did. I'd be curious what it was. Anyhow, we win the pot with a pair of nines, and it worked out well for us. But I think we missed a value bet there on the river, and maybe even making it a little bit bigger on the turn just to get a little bit more value. They probably wouldn't have called the river bet, but if UTG ended up having one of those hands that we talked about, like Jack 8 or 8-7 spades, you know, there's a few combos in there that I think we can get called by, and we probably missed it. So anyhow, that's the hand for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I hope you have a happy new year, and I will see you all in 2019. I believe I'm going out to Vegas. I'm either going to go out there the beginning of January, so here in next week, I guess, or the end of January. I've got a string of days off, but I'm working a lot in between and doing the stock options. Stock options is right when I think I'm starting to get the game figured out, then I have a day like today where every single time I think it's going to go up, it actually goes down. And then every time I think it's going to go down, it actually goes up. So right when I'm starting to think I'm getting the hang of it, then I realize I'm not. And it's just going to take more time and more coaching. And my mentor, he's telling me, he's like, no, these are good ones. You know, it's a lot like poker where, like, you know, sometimes it, you know, if you're new to poker and you raise pocket eights in middle position and then you end up, you know, getting called down by the blind and you're like, did I misplay this hand? Should I have just thrown it away? And the answer is no, you shouldn't throw pocket eights away when it's folded to you in middle position. You should raise with that. But just by bad variance, you've lost that hand three times in a row doesn't mean you shouldn't play it. It's kind of the same way in this stock options game. It's, you know, there's these setups and, you know, sometimes you win them, sometimes you lose them. And today was definitely an 0-for-4 day. So that was a little stinger. But, yeah, that's all I got for this week. You guys enjoy yourself and thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Are you committed? Because without commitment, nothing happens. You have to be committed through the storm and the rain and the heartache and the pain and the disappointment, or you're not going to make it. It's a commitment. It's not a feeling. While he was golfing, I was studying. While they were shooting hoops, I was studying. While they was playing games and sitting up and eating and joking in the restaurant, I was studying. You can't get out of something that you're not willing to put into it. You have to put your everything, your mind, your energy, your effort, your discipline, your tenacity. Nothing is going to jump out the fire. If you don't throw something in there, it's not going to happen. But if we fight every day, one of them days is going to be my day.
The only one that can stop you from winning is you. The enemy is not your neighbor. The enemy is not your coworker. Your enemy is not your boss. That enemy is staring you in the face every morning you wake up.
You forego immediate pleasure for the exchange of long-term self-respect. If you want to be happy, you have to discipline your behavior. The road to sustained happiness is through disciplining your behavior.
Easy choices, hard life. Hard choices, easy life. What we most fear doing, asking, saying, these are very often exactly what we most need to do.
The road to power is in taking responsibility. Your life is your responsibility and your responsibility alone.